You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Financial Ineptitude presents Two Bulls in a China Shop. You can find our podcast at twobullsinachinashop.com or just search Two Bulls in a China Shop wherever you stream your podcasts. Hello and welcome to the China Shop, everyone. Step on inside, kicking those doors open. Get your asses in here. I'm Shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. How are you doing today, Kyle?
Doing good, and you?
Fan-fucking-tastic. Well, I mean, maybe not that good. I'm doing good.
How about you now?
Oh, yes. It's just been a long week. I feel like it's been a really long week.
Yeah, kind of has.
So kick off your shoes, sit back, relax, rage against the hedge machine. We'd love to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here smashing our way through a complete set of fine china, sharing those ever-growing strategies for maximizing gains and cutting losses. If you are new to the shop and stock trading in general, you can always check out one of our knowledge or resource centers on financialineptitude.com, or you can give a beginning trading episode a listen. We have several of those linked in the episode description, but the best place to be is our awesome free Discord server.
Completely free.
Completely free. Yay! We get on there all the time, shooting the shit, talking stocks, sharing charts, sharing strategies. It's just an amazing place to be. Totally free, no paid tiers or special access areas.
I feel like I've been shit posting more than usual, though. Probably need to bring back in more analysis and less Kermit the Frog dick pics.
Oh, those are the best. I love cartoon and puppet genitals. They're my favorite. No, delete that, Dan. That's ridiculous. Who would say that? Not a furry. When you do join that Discord server, send us a private message or email with your mailing address. We'll send you some smash it yourself swag straight from the shop. We're just so glad everybody's here. It's a lot of fun, always better with friends.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle, any exciting show news going on?
Oh, let's see here. We have this week coming up Eric Mason, an economist from Massachusetts, I believe. Really, really smart guy. Well, a lot of fun, too. That was a really fun interview to record.
Yeah, a lot of fun on that one.
The week after that, we got Anthony Vecino, who's a real estate expert. And Anthony Fetsies is coming back the week after that. And then rounding out the month with Orderflow Labs. Leo and Fleury have committed to returning.
Oh, got him on the hook, huh?
Yeah. Let's see. What else is going on? Oh, we got the new trailer almost finished. If you still want to send submissions to us telling people why you think they should listen, you can just send those to us at twobulls@financialineptitude.com, or you can DM to me in the Discord. Tonight at 7 p.m. Central Time, we'll be watching Velocil Pastor with Team Mandalore as our March Consequences. That is in the Discord events, so you can check that out for details if you want to listen in and watch us suffer. And then the last bit of exciting news. Yeah, that one's probably less exciting for you. In fact, actually chatting with Ray about that, and she's telling me how there's a scene about 5 minutes into it where a car was supposed to explode, but they never went back in post and put the explosion in. So there's this giant box, like just a black box with white words saying car explosion.
Oh, God.
Really looking forward to this.
Oh, wow.
Surprisingly, too, they actually made a second one.
Why not? First one was so easy to make.
Save so much money on the editing floor.
You're right.
The last bit of exciting news is that we have some new songs to debut today.
Mm-hmm.
We decided to move away from the song parodies as we realized that they're not exactly parodies.
More like satire.
If anybody wants to contribute to those, too, feel free, because it is hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
As Dan knows, his years as a musician.
It's hard work for you. Kyle, help me with these lyrics.
It's hard work keeping you on track.
that's true. That's a job and a half.
I recorded some backing tracks.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah, excited to debut those today.
Yeah, we got a few of the new ones, a few more new ones coming next week. It's all good stuff. It's all good stuff. Well, We have got a peculiar, pedantic, peaceful episode for you today. Plenty of market moving news, stocks on the radar, and more options than ways Kanye West has fantasized about killing Pete Davidson.
That does not sound peaceful.
Well, I had three different ones queued up, but then I couldn't see them, so I just reached.
Fuck you. No, I'm just kidding.
Reach out to us, folks. We love your messages and comments on Twitter and Facebook. Love it on the Discord. If you're old school, you can send us an email, number2bulls@financialineptitude.com, or you can send us a phone call to 725-22-BULLS. Maybe you got a hot stock tip. Maybe you want to tell us about a great trade you just made. Or maybe you...
I got it. Yeah. Maybe you just escaped from a Supermax prison in Los Angeles after saving the president's daughter and have decided to activate a super weapon to knock us back into the Stone Age.
Oh, yeah. Run, baby, run, baby, run, baby, way. Escape LA. However that song went. Yeah, it doesn't matter what you want to talk about. We just love it when you reach out. Yeah. And then we go straight to the news from here, right?
No, unfortunately, we have to take our lumps.
God damn you, random! Sorry, I just had to get that out of my system.
Peaceful. Peaceful. I'm not sure who goes first. We both lost. I think my stop might have been less than yours.
I lost $32.
Oh, you're back at break even, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So it's probably me.
Yeah, you go first.
Yeah, I had ConocoPhillips because I'm like, oil's going to the moon, baby. Sanctions.
To the moon.
Yeah, well, apparently the stock price didn't agree. Started out really strong Monday, but halfway through Tuesday, it started to drop. And then Wednesday morning hit my stop at 95, which brings my bet total from $532.98 down to $500.37. I'm up 37 cents.
I did not fare so well either. BP, not PP. I had HZNP at open the week at 99.05. Hit my stop on Tuesday or Wednesday at 102. Ugh, God, that was really frustrating on that one because everything else was falling except for that stock. Motherfucker. So, yeah, my bet hole went from 490.71 down to 476.10.
Ooh.
So, I am in last place and well behind Random, who picked Westwater Resources, WWR, which opened at 185, peaked at 238 for triggering the 15% trailing stop that we've completely forgotten exists because it hasn't been used in so long.
So long.
At 202. So Random ended up finishing the week with $573.52.
Good Lord. Oh, that's a kick to the balls.
And we knew it when we picked it, when it popped up on the random selection. Like, fuck.
This is a risk?
Shit. Yeah.
Okay, well, Random picks a meme stock.
Yeah. Two can play that game.
We'll be back at the end of the episode making, well, I hope boring bet picks, because thrilling ones just seem to be good for Random. Stick around to the end of the episode. We'll be back at you with those. But until then, let's check out the new song for the news. Dow drops deep on moving inflation, COVID frustration, war damnation. We're just bringing you the fucking news. You gotta recognize the game if you don't want to lose. We're just Skip-Skip-Two-Bulls trading information.
There we are.
Rioters raiding, insider trading, taxes are raising, bills on the hill. We got a crypto mill. No, they ain't growing weed. When the Fed speaks today, it's some shit we don't need.
Sing it, Dan.
Two bulls trading information.
What?
Two bulls trading information.
I'm inclined to agree.
Two bulls trading information.
That is accurate. Very accurate.
What is All right, Kyle. You want to lead us off? I think you have that Beanie Baby story.
No, I got something about oil, which is, you know, right up your alley. Bank of America thinks that if oil tops 125, that it's going to break part of the U.S. credit market, which looks like they're referring to the junk bonds.
Ooh, that's scary.
Okay. They think that if Russia really does cut off their supply to all the Western countries, that markets could be seeing oil at $150 to $200 a barrel. That'll cause a major negative impact on consumer spending, manufacturing, and credit conditions in the U.S. So the of A team has studied that sharp increases in oil prices and how it tends to dampen business activities, and they found that manufacturing and services tend to dip when oil rises 50% from its last three-year average.
Yeah, everything's more expensive.
The team, this is what the team wrote, they said, if we end up averaging $100 in oil in the next few months, the increase is going to be on the cusp of 50% from the last 3 years. If we go consistently above 125, the increase will push us meaningfully beyond the threshold where sensitivities get much stronger. So this is going to be trouble for the companies that are reliant on the $1.7 trillion high yield or junk bond market. Junk bond spreads have climbed about 1% so far to start the year to about 4 percentage points above the treasuries. So the junk bond spreads since the start of the year, they've climbed from about 1% up 4 percentage points above treasuries, according to the B of A U.S. High Yield Index.
Wow.
So if oil, with oil at 125, they think that those spreads will increase to 5 percentage points above the risk-free rates and 6 percentage points above the benchmark with oil north of 150.
Oof, wow.
So yeah, expensive oil, not looking so rosy.
I just gassed up yesterday and had to pay $4.50 a gallon.
That's surprising because we're about the same.
Very much made me sad.
Ours was at $4.55 yesterday or Thursday.
Yeah.
Surprised that we're similar. I thought Illinois had higher. I thought Illinois was higher than Arizona, but I guess not.
It was before everybody moved to Arizona and all the prices of everything went up.
Yeah, right. Stupid Californians and Canadians. No offense. Love our Canadian friends.
Made me really, really wish I already owned an electric vehicle. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I was just seeing something that said that it still could be more expensive to recharge a car than to fill it with gas.
Yeah, big gas would definitely tell you that.
I don't think it was big gas, but... Well, big gas also supplies a lot of the... a lot of the power infrastructure is still really on coal and natural gas. So, you know, even if you are an electric vehicle user, you're still tied to the stupid rising oil prices.
Certainly. That's yeah. What I was saying. Like, everything's going to go up. Just moving things, manufacturing things, like oil's just used everywhere. It's tradable energy, right?
Yeah. And it's used in everything. All the packaging, the plastics.
Oh, yeah. Plastics.
Like, yeah, there's no getting away from it anytime soon.
Well, I have heard of at least one potential legislative fix.
Oh, which is?
The Democrats have introduced a bill on this past Thursday. They want to tax the biggest oil companies that have been recording their biggest profits to use the money to provide quarterly checks to Americans. So it would apply to big firms like ExxonMobil that produce or import over 300,000 barrels of oil a day, which would exempt smaller companies. It would be a 50% tax imposed on the difference between the current price of a barrel and the average price between 2015 and 2019. I'm not quite sure where they got that math or, you know, why they chose that.
I'm not sure where they... Does this have any chance of passing?
Well, probably not.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
They're not expecting Joe Manchin of West Virginia to be on board with this.
Shocking.
But... at the same time, they're also not expecting any Republican support on the idea of suspending the 18.5 cent per gallon federal gas tax either. So can't raise taxes or cut taxes. They'd be trying to use the same stimulus check setup that they used during the pandemic to decide who would get checks. So people making under 75 grand a year or married couples making under 150 grand a year would receive payments in this potential bill, which, as we said, is never going to pass. But it's an interesting idea. When you get further into the article, as part of the impetus of this is that because we're seeing record profits and earnings in the oil companies, they're saying,
right,
hey, we wouldn't be paying this much if you took a cut of your profits, if you just started charging less for your oil.
Right. And part of the problem is that when oil prices, the spot prices go up, just because that's the price today, that doesn't mean that's what, you know, ExxonMobil paid for it in their stockpiles and inventories. So they may have stuff that they've been holding on to for, you know, 3 months that was purchased at a much cheaper rate, but now they can sell it for higher. So guess what? That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't seem to work the other way around, though, does it?
No, never. Never. This price of oil's gone down. Fuck it. Just dump it.
Ah, well, they'll still pay it. They'll still pay it.
No, they already used to paying the higher prices. No easy way out from rising oil costs.
What else you got?
I got the Janet Yellen, our Treasury Secretary, has come out and said that Americans will likely see another year of very uncomfortably high inflation.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So we're shocked.
For a whole nother year.
She's kind of been the one stepping out in front, I've noticed. I guess she's the bad cop and Powell's the good cop.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I've noticed that too.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have inflation. Yeah, it's just months. Yeah, because just months ago she was like, "Oh, inflation's gonna be moderate," when everybody else was like, "No, we're fine, we're fine." She also reiterated the problems with oil and wheat because of the invasion of Ukraine. You know, Russian oil and Ukrainian wheat and Russian wheat are such big influences in the world. So like those there's inflation that we can't control.
Also, another issue with the wheat was that Russia looked like was going to ban fertilizer exports. So that could cause even more exacerbation on that.
Shit. Do we get a lot of fertilizer out of Russia?
I mean, it's not an insignificant amount. Like, I don't know how much $1.9 billion worth of fertilizer buys you, but it seems like a lot.
I do wonder how long that the Russians saying something like, hey, we're not going to export any fertilizer. How long will that go on? As the Russian economy is in such a severe downturn, and they're like, wait, we're not going to take that money from fertilizer?
Like, we need to bring some money in.
Right? Like, we can't do it without any money. Like, we just got fertilizer sitting around. Like, China's not buying all of it.
They're trying, but they've already increased their exports to, like, their other three trading partners that since the Crimea invasion when they were sanctioned the first time. So, not sure how much more they can shoulder or absorb. Didn't Yellen also say something about how she didn't expect a recession this year?
It wasn't in that one. I think that was in an article earlier in the week. She was saying that she didn't see a recession based on recent bond market moves.
Okay.
She added it because of the bond rate market stuff, we might be in for an interest rate cut, but I don't think that's happening.
No, probably not. Goldman Sachs seems to disagree. They cut their U.S. GDP forecast, I think, by a full percent.
Ouch.
And they say the odds of a recession now are as high as 35%.
Damn.
Yeah. So, with the CPI data coming out on Thursday showing that inflation is at a 40-year high even before the impact of the recent sanctions on Russia, and besides the humanitarian catastrophe, sky-high commodity prices have been a result so far of what has been the two-week invasion. Economists have now cut their forecast for growth from in 22 to 1.75 from 2%, and the consensus is 2.75, so they're a full point below the consensus.
Damn.
According to them, they say it's a pretty straightforward call. Combining our commodity strategists' forecasts with estimates of pass-through to consumer prices, we estimate that rising gas and food prices will create an effective 0.7% drag on real disposable personal income in 22, with larger drags for lower-income households whose spending is typically more sensitive to fluctuations in income. That was Joseph Briggs. So you've continued with, although households will likely partially offset this income drag by reduced savings, this hit to income should weigh on spending in 22. And again, we see oil popping up with the price targets up, they're saying up to 175 a barrel is what they see possible. Supply losses reach 4 million barrels a day. And they haven't assumed any growth hit due to metal shortages, since aside from palladium, only a small share of U.S. commodity demand is met by Russian exports. Recession risks are mounting, they continued. They expect further service sector reopening and spending from excess savings to keep the economy growing. But the chances of a recession next year are between 20 and 35%, roughly implied by the slope of the U.S. Treasury yield curve. Not sure what most of those things mean, but I do know recession is usually not a good thing.
So they literally just said, like, we'll be fine for a little bit as people empty their savings.
Yes. Or as they stop saving. It's not looking good.
That's grim.
Yeah, I would agree. We got that to look forward to now.
I thought war was good for the economy. Shit.
Well, I mean, I think we have to be in the war. Or at least more people that we can sell to.
No, we have to be completely out of the war, selling to both sides. That's good for the economy.
Yeah, we need more people involved, I think, if that's the case. Which don't really want. I think I'd rather recession.
Don't want it to happen. I honestly think it's starting to happen.
Kind of feels like it.
Ugh. Yeah.
Should we move on? This is getting kind of dark.
Oh, all sunshine and happiness in the China shop today.
Oh, shit.
Well, I don't have any other stories.
I don't either. All my stuff, rest of my stuff is for stocks.
Oh, there was that other thing I wanted to talk about. Speaking of sunshine and happiness, you know who's really amazing person to talk to?
Mm-hmm, I do.
None other than the beautiful Sue Pullen. Two Bulls in a China Shop is proudly brought to you by Sue Pullen at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender. Sue Pullen is a certified mortgage advisor, focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She's got over 20 years experience helping thousands of people purchase, refinance, reverse mortgages. Sue does it all. She's licensed in 27 states. Reach out and see what Sue could do for you. Best way to reach her is just give her a call, 520-977-7904. Or you can send her an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number, 2289. Sue Pullen has an MLS number of 206048. That email again is spullen@fairwaymc.com. That phone number, 520-977-7904. And I know it's her phone number because I called her last weekend. She answered. She doesn't even have a secretary answer. It's just her.
She did.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't expect her to.
I think that's her personal cell that she allows us to give out. All right. Well, Two Bulls in a China Shop is also proud to be affiliated with Trade Pro Academy.
Trade Pro!
Do I need to read this whole thing again? I think people probably get it by now.
Oh!
Maybe we should just talk about Trade Pro in general.
I see. Dan, definitely go through the whole Sue Pullen thing. Trade Pro, my bit. No.
Trade Pro Academy is an educational platform that offers institutional trader development programs to new and experienced independent traders. Translation, learn to trade like the big institutions.
Trade Pro.
They have a great staff of highly knowledgeable, successful traders, and there's no better place that we've found to learn all you need to know to be a successful trader. Find them online at tradeproacademy.com or just use our affiliate link in the episode description, as it's a great way to support the show and improve your own knowledge and skills. Mm-hmm. And the thing I like about their community too, not only is Vico and George, like, you get the feeling they actually like care about you and your success.
They do, yeah.
Like, George is a professional trader. He's not an educator by profession.
He's just good at it.
He's good at it, and he's trying to give back and teach other people to do what he does so that way they can experience financial freedom.
Yeah.
But there's been some struggles in their live trading rooms lately. So he hosted a special webinar on Friday for the people that were struggling, where they opened up the microphone to let their members pull up their trade logs and journals and review some of the struggles. And he went through and tried to help people individually. It was an amazing thing to see. And that's the kind of stuff that you get with their community.
Yeah, constant interaction with the professionals. There's no holding back.
Yeah, and it was kind of a hard conversation for some people too.
I bet. I didn't want to go on there, not just because I'm not doing futures at the moment, but because I didn't want to have to open up my journals and logs and expose my terribleness and have them judge me very rightfully.
I'm still waiting for you to post your journal in the Discord.
I journal in the Discord every day.
That's true. All right. Next.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. I'm not done talking about awesome people. The amazing Flary and Leo from Order Flow Labs were kind enough to share their toolkit with us for trading futures on Sierra Charts. And let me tell you, they've got some amazing custom studies for structure and execution. But we've said it all before, buy sell zones, exhaustion absorption detectors. Kyle loves the liquidity zones, the reconstructed tape. They just got something for everybody. These are the tools they themselves as professional traders use. Amazing Discord community, constantly talking and people through what they're doing and how to best use these tools. Check them out, orderflowlabs.com. It's really some amazing stuff. We're very blessed to be able to check that out.
Yes. It's like having two professional traders come over and draw on your charts for you.
Mm-hmm.
And who could say no to that? All right, Dan. Time for some stocks.
Ooh, yeah. Let's talk about some stocks.
Should we ring the bell?
Let's ring that bell. Forgot about the bell.
Ding, 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 ding. Yep. All right, where should we start?
I want to start off just going in the Wayback Machine to last week, and I want to bring up Rivian, because if you recall, somebody China Shop said it's not a big bet to bet they're going to have bad earnings if they just tried to raise the price on pre-orders.
Yep.
Did have a very bad earnings. They opened the week at 48.02. Got as high as 49.44. Mm-hmm. Earnings was Thursday. Going into earnings, it was in the upper 40s. Between it closed that day at about 42 at earnings. It ended the week at 38. So, yeah,
bad earnings. I was keeping an eye on it throughout the week. I kind of forgot about it. What was the actual earnings date? Was that Thursday or Wednesday?
Thursday.
Yeah, I think I was looking at it Monday and Tuesday, but the options contract prices still seem pretty pricey. But it looks like with a 10-point move from Monday, you probably would have done just fine.
Yeah, Kyle, they posted a 10% revenue miss.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
Not good at all.
All right, well, if you're done patting yourself on the back.
Sure am.
What do you have for this week?
Well, Amazon has announced a twofer, 20-for-1 stock split, and a $10 billion buyback.
$10 billion. How much is that? It's per their market capitalization, $1.48 trillion market cap. So that's just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah,
but still, buybacks are good.
That's first split since 1999.
Wow.
You know, they're trading around 3,000. I think they got as high as 3,700.
Yeah.
So this is going to bring the price.
I think they had a real nice jump initially, and yeah, it started started coming back down to earth again. It didn't quite arrest the bear trend it's been in.
No.
But it gave it a little bit of respite.
It gave it a gap to fill is what it did.
Yeah, pretty much. There you go.
So it's going to, if this split today, it would be around $150 a share. I am excited because that means I'll be able to afford Amazon options.
Oh, that's a good point.
Them being such a big part of the stock market average, you know, like the FANG, like I said, the MANG. I don't know. Oh, Meta's out. Yeah, it's NVIDIA Bangum. Now. The Nang.
Oh, yeah, that'd be Mangum now, right?
Mangum.
Magna.
Mangum. Oh, there you go. Yeah, I'll be excited to be able to play Ford options because, you know, instead of like, oh, I think the NASDAQ's going down, I'll be like, oh, fuck it. I'm just going to short Amazon, buy some Amazon puts.
When's that stock split supposed to take effect?
Distributions from the stock split are going to be made at the close of business on June 3rd. And then trading will begin, I think it's a Friday, and then trading will begin on a split adjusted basis on June 6th. So we'll see the new price on June 6th.
That's exciting to circle that date on the calendar to start paying attention to their stock price too, so I can get a good feel for it.
Oh, yeah. Also, what happens to a put contract if it splits?
I think that gets split adjusted, but I think we looked at this one time at another stock.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
I don't remember exactly what happened, but it should get split adjusted. Yeah, you can't buy a $150 put and then wait till the...
It's in the money!
Suddenly it's in the money. I think what it does is it becomes a split adjusted price for that strike, but then you get the split adjusted number of shares for the contract. It'd be my guess, but I'd have to look that up to be certain.
You know, I was reading on Reddit, somebody was talking about shorting the Russian ETFs that got suspended trading or having puts on it, and the market froze the puts. I didn't understand exactly what happened, but the gist was their puts are now worthless, even though the price is going low. Yeah, I don't, like I said, it was just a Reddit thread. It's not anything I posted, but I figured it was relevant to discuss at the moment. Yeah, if the shares aren't trading, no one can buy them from you, right?
Yeah, but does that if they suspend trading on that, do they add the time back to the contracts once they do start trading again, or how does that work?
I would guess they have to. I don't know. Let's. If anybody knows, give us a call and fill us in. I'd love to know the answer to that.
Yeah, please. I really want to know the answer to that.
I would assume that's the fairest way to do it. It's
not another risk I want to take. Hey, your stock's been suspended. Fuck.
Speaking of Russian debt and losing money over Russian investments, are you familiar with PIMCO? Investing firm.
It's a betting company, isn't it?
PIMCO. No, oh. they run like an income fund. They run a bunch of funds.
I always think of the horse racing track. That's not PIMCO. That's similar, but not quite.
They've got a bunch of giant funds, like the $140 billion PIMCO index fund is PIMIX. That fund in particular held over $1 billion worth of government. Russian government international bonds as of the end of 2021. Mm-hmm. And they'd also written almost $1 billion of credit default swap protections on Russia. by the end of last year. So PIMCO is going to really have to pay out if Russia defaults on its debt, which looks like it is increasingly more and more likely. And the PIMCO Total Return Bond Fund and Emerging Markets Bond Fund also held similar positions. PIMCO declined to comment to the Financial Times when they asked him about it. It's gonna push some huge losses on PIMCO. Earlier this week, Fitch downgraded Russia's sovereign rating by 6 notches, so they're in junk territory, saying default is imminent. Moody's and S&P have slashed their rating to junk status. It really looks like, and I feel bad for anybody out there in any PIMCO funds, really looks like their Russian investments are about to hurt them greatly.
Yeah.
Won't be the end of the fund, but you buy the dip.
Or wait for the next earnings statement before you buy anything.
Right. Same thing. Yeah, what else is going on in the world?
I've got one that's affecting like more than just one company. It was the SEC. I remember, what is this, a year ago, and we're talking about them looking at or introducing legislation to delist Chinese stocks that fail to meet their reporting requirements within like the next 3 years.
Oh, yeah. I remember that well.
So the SEC has identified five companies: Beijing, Beijene, Yum China Holdings, which is the franchise rights for KFC and Taco Bell in China, Zai Lab Limited, ACM Research, and HutchMed Limited. The Yum shares, Yum China, fell by as much as 15% following this, but it also affected things like Alibaba and Baidu, some of the other big Chinese names. And I think NIO even's been really a shit in the bed lately. So if you're trading Chinese stocks, be careful with them. It's been a while since we looked at Baba, but Baba saw was below 90, I think, today. Yeah, it closed the week at 86.71, so, whew. And sell volume's increasing, so I don't think these are done falling yet. Right where it's at right now, it's about to drop into another area where it used to, where it consolidated before. This is, 86 is about where its IPO price was at. Like, it hasn't been this low since 2016 after it IPO'd. IPO'd back in 14. I remember because I bought it at the IPO.
Oh, really?
Really glad I sold that a long time ago. Yes. I'm pretty sure I dumped that around in the 200s somewhere. But yeah, if it loses this 86, then I mean, it's the range it was bouncing around back in 15 to 16 was this 86 to 57.5.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's about to re-enter that.
Yeah, it's another one. Like, you buy puts and it gets delisted. Those puts aren't going to be worth anything.
I don't know. I'm not sure how that works.
It's a learning show. We should try and learn that.
Yeah, we should probably learn that, right?
This has just been an epic, crushing drop since we first started talking about it back at the end of 2020.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fuck, where did I sell that at? It might have been close to... I might have taken it out when it was at 300 or 305, I think I might have gotten.
That's incredible.
I'm really happy I unloaded that. And the last thing that I wanted to talk about was Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah, some exciting stuff happened with them this week, huh?
Yes. So, what day was that? Was that Monday? Yeah, that was Monday. So, I think, I don't know if it was pre-market or if it was over the weekend, but what's his name? Ryan Cohen, the guy who rescued GameStop, has taken just a shy of 10% stake of Bed Bath & Beyond. And then he submitted a letter saying that they should consider like selling off some of their holdings or even potentially like a full sale of the company. And I think what caused more of the giant pop on Monday was that the company said they were considering what he said. So combine the fact with him taking a stake in it with the fact that the company was looking at taking some of his advice caused the share price to tag that $30 resistance level on Monday morning. Since then, it's been decreasing. It's been holding a support around 1950. And below that, we got a really nice gap down to about 17.
Yeah.
I think this is going to fill that gap unless there's more good news to come out. It's kind of hard to sustain that kind of meteoric rise like that.
Do you think that it was all to do with the business side of it? Or do you think some of that could have just been driven by Ryan Cohen's name in the memeverse?
I think a lot of it had to do with that. And I think what happened was, because it's still a high short interest stock, I think a lot of it was because the price stock peaked out around like 35 in pre-market, and then basically from the open on, it was just decreasing from there. So I think most of that rise was people who were short closing out those short positions, and then the decline was either more people shorting or people taking profit after it finally got back up to a range where a lot of people were buying in that 30 to 27 area.
Or it was Ryan Cohen who bought at 13.
That could be.
Sold it all off at 30.
Probably not, because I think he likes the company enough to where he wants to have a piece of, or a say in the direction it goes. You know, you get 10% stake, then it should be a board seat. But yeah, so it's definitely one that I'll be watching this coming week. I'll be watching that, like I said, I think it was about 19.5. See if that fails. And if that does, then I'll be watching it to fill that gap down to about 17.
You sold some covered calls during that spike, didn't you?
Yeah, I still have about 300 shares that purchased that I had been selling covered calls on. I think my cost basis was somewhere around like $20 a share. So when it saw that price at open, I just started selling covered calls, and I think I closed one out and then sold another one when it bounced on Tuesday. And I have the option to sell another one if I can. So I'd like to see one more bounce before it drops again, but you know, take what I can. Yeah, that peak there pretty much almost made my month.
Wow. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, so much so that I took the next day off and did basically just manage positions. After talking to Kevin, I was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't be trading today. I have too much confidence.
Had a great day yesterday, right?
Especially when it's something that's kind of more luck-based than anything else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You didn't, unless you're friends and buddies with Ryan Cohen, you didn't tell me.
Right. No, it's just a stock I like, something I was holding for the long term.
My buddy Ryan's going to buy 10% of BBBY.
I like to think I would have told you.
I would hope.
Should we move on?
Yeah. What do we move on to? What's left?
Crypto.
Crypto.
Be brave. Fortune favors the brave, Dan. Fortune favors the brave.
Yeah. Four words. Romans from ancient times have always known. Fortune favors the Bitcoin.
Buy, doggy. Buy it all. Pancake swap.
Buy.
Sushi coin. Sushi. Hamster. Crypto.
All right. Yeah.
What do we got here? You want to load us off?
Yeah, quick little teaser from eBay at their one of their investor meetings. They had a slide that alluded to starting to take crypto payments for your eBay purchases. They already do. They sell NFTs on eBay. But they have yet to accept any kind of crypto as payment, but they are planning on it. And that's, to me, when things will get interesting with crypto. And I might seriously start moving something into one of the coins.
Or in eBay?
Not into eBay.
Because
into
eBay?
Crypto.
Oh, okay.
eBay, to me, is the canary in the coal mine in this situation. When people can start using cryptocurrency as currency, I think we're going to start to see it behave differently.
Right.
The value of it will behave differently. So we're right on the cusp of to me, the biggest development of crypto since the development of crypto would be getting merchants to accept them.
Well, I mean, there's already some that do. I remember AMC was one of the leaders in that back in 21 when they started taking cryptos for buying movie tickets.
Oh yeah. Do they still allow that?
Wasn't even Tesla doing that, letting people pay for their Teslas with Bitcoin? Or they started to and then had to cancel that,
right? But this is a marketplace, so it's not like just one business like AMC or Tesla. Like
right, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so it'd be like if Amazon let you purchase stuff from the Prime marketplace. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. That's
definitely a bigger deal.
It's going to really, and I don't know what'll happen to it. I don't know if it'll go up, it'll go down, but it'll really cement it as definitely not just some tech novelty. It's not a Beanie Baby. Like we're actually using this shit.
Right. Yeah. I can't go buy goods with a Beanie Baby unless we go back to the barter system.
I was going to say, like the Bookmans in Tucson, like you could trade in your Beanie Baby and get a guitar. No. Yeah, you can get anything you want on eBay. And so if they start taking Bitcoin, look out. Shit's changing.
All right. Another big news. Biden announced an executive order on Wednesday. This is the first, a quote, whole of government federal policy to address the risks and harness the potential benefits of cryptocurrencies by directing the government agencies to take a slew of measures around financial stability, illicit finance, financial inclusion, and investor protection. So part of the executive order that he issued was to direct the government to place urgency on the R&D of a potential digital dollar coin.
Yes.
But the reason why I think the crypto market spiked after this executive order came out was not because of what he said, but it was more what wasn't said in there. There was nothing talking about regulations or anything directed at like trying to limit or oversee the existing cryptos. It was more just talking about doing some R&D and looking at, like, the big one was the digital dollar. Like, that was the big takeaway from it.
Oh, man. And so continuing our other conversation, like, if there's a digital dollar to compete with all these other coins, what would you choose as a consumer? Like, if you're going to load up on some digital currency.
Ask China, don't they have a digital currency? And we're basically forced to accept it because...
Japan.
China did too, I thought.
Oh, I don't
digital
know.
Currency.
They might.
Could be wrong.
You've never been wrong before.
That's what would be more scary is they kick Bitcoin out because they don't want the competition. I have a hard time seeing something like that happening. Especially as more and more people start accepting it as an actual currency, like you were saying, the more ingrained it becomes in the economy, then the less likely I think they are to be able to get rid of it or severely limit.
There are several countries that have digital currencies. India.
Oh, did you look it up? Are you fact checking me?
Fact checking? No, I'm trying to provide information to the listeners.
No, I appreciate it.
Bank of Russia was trying to do it in October 2017 to decrease their dependence on the U.S. dollar. Obviously, I don't think they haven't quite implemented it yet. Brazil, U.S. is on its way. Nothing about Asia. Stupid Investopedia. What do you know?
Yeah, they have a digital version of the yuan. So, yes. Ha! I was right. Suck it.
Exactly. So, they kicked Bitcoin out.
China has a little more freedom to do things like that because of their less than stellar record when it comes to personal freedoms.
One person, one directive policy.
Yes.
Well, the leader said it. We all got to do it.
Right.
I got one last crypto story to talk about, and that is that FBI Director Christopher Wray is saying that Russia does not quite have the ability to circumvent sanctions through cryptocurrency that people might think. Director Wray said the FBI and its partners had built up significant expertise on digital assets, citing the department's recent work in seizing large amounts of tokens as evidence there were vulnerabilities in using crypto to get around sanctions. And I quote, "The Russians' ability to circumvent the sanctions with cryptocurrency is probably highly overestimated on the part of maybe them and others. We are, as a community and with our partners overseas, far more effective on that than I think that sometimes they appreciate. And there's a lot of expertise in terms of tools and strategies to help block that kind of effort. Ultimately, what they really need to do is get access to some form of fiat currency, which becomes more challenging."
Right.
So I don't know. He doesn't like point to any specifics like this is the shit we're doing. They can't evade us. But he does seem pretty confident.
Well, it's a good thing. They shouldn't.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Don't tell them what you're doing. Yeah.
They just pointed to like we've been in the crypto universe. We seize these tokens from criminal activity, like we can seize theirs, I guess is what they're saying.
Well, that's the thing too, that's the other side of a digital currency like that is that every coin is unique and traceable, right?
So anonymous.
Is it time to,
come on, motherfucker! Time to
reach for the skies? Damn it. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I did anything ugly this week, but I did, my good and bad were definitely related and they definitely happened Friday. And you were definitely there for it.
Oh, yeah. I'll just go first and then let you go. So my good was cutting some of my losers. I finally cut the stupid Capital One fiasco.
Yeah.
And I also cut my Ford calls. I did a much better job of cutting GE when it went the wrong way. I cut that pretty much as soon as it failed the support level that I was targeting. We were talking about it last week.
Well done.
So It took a while, but it's a big mental win to actually save some bit of that capital. So I did get some capital preservation out of it. The other good thing I did this week too is I had a really bad luck trade on Friday with the futures. I took my first trade in like 2 weeks and ended up eating a stop that was like six ticks away from where the minis were actually trading. Like, I have no idea how that stop was actually hit.
Ugh, I hate that.
And it was really, really fucked with my head too, because like the minis came within like two or three ticks of hitting that stop, but never actually would have hit it. And then it proceeded to do exactly what I thought it was going to do and hit both of my take profit targets. So a trade that should have been good due to bad luck was, you know, a loss that I had to eat. So I stopped trading after that. I didn't let that, I felt it affecting me mentally. So rather than let that, you know, small loss turn the day into a big loss, I just basically sat on my hands for the rest of the day.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Something I would have probably chased, you know, a couple months ago.
That's super progress. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, two good progresses in a week. So that means I don't have to have an ugly. So what was your good and bad if they're tied together?
I've been trading pretty good all week, just in general. And I don't mean like everything I buy turns to gold. I just mean like my trading decisions, right, levels, and following risk management. Made a really great Tilray trade. Bought some puts, and so like I said, they tie together. And then Friday, I decided very badly to like, I'm done paper trading. I've been paper trading for a week already. I got the money to. I'll risk management. I'll make a play on the spy scalp, and it went against me, and I got stopped out. And I was looking to jump right back into a trade. I was ready to pull the trigger. I actually had a buy limit on the books waiting to be filled.
You had an order, yeah.
Thankfully, you were there in the Discord. We were there hanging out talking, and you said, I don't think that's a good trade. I think you just want to be trading. And it's like the bubble popped in my head. I was like, oh, wait. That's true. And you know what? I am trading. I still have these fucking Tilray puts open. Like, what am I doing? I'm in a winning trade right now. Like, so I consider it bad because if we hadn't been talking, it wouldn't have occurred to me.
Right.
You know, I wasn't taking my set skill or like Rich Friesen says, I wasn't taking note of my emotions and realizing like it was just, I want to keep playing. I want to be trading.
That's a classic revenge trade is what that was.
Yes. Yes. I'll show you, market. And I would have lost on the second time too.
I know. Thing is, I don't know if I would have caught that too if I didn't just catch myself and stop myself too.
Oh, doing the same thing.
After I made the decision to stop, because I found myself looking for another entry, like, okay, let me catch back into this. Like, wait a minute. No, now I'm not at my levels anymore. This is not a good trade. Like, if I hadn't just gone through the same process, then I'm not sure I would have been much help.
Yeah. No. Well, I do appreciate the help that you did provide. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Ready for my bad?
Yeah.
I mismanaged a trailer on a spy call really badly.
I remember it. Yeah. Yeah.
I had taken profit on two of them, and then I was sitting with one last runner left, and it was kind of moving. I had my take profit order in place, but I didn't have a bracket set up, so I had a really hard time pulling the trigger to get back out of that, and I finally ended up cutting it for a bit of a loss. It didn't make the trade a loss overall, but rather, I mean, it cost me, you know, a good percentage point of what that trade should have been worth. Trying to see what the actual numbers here were. Yeah, my entry is at 97. And rather than having my stop around like 110, which is where it should have been, I ended up having to cut it at 75 cents. So this trade was specifically a day trade. So there's really no excuse to not be using the brackets in that case.
Yeah.
So, yep, that got put into my journals. And that might actually be an ugly. I don't know. I'll let you decide.
I don't know. I remember we were chatting about that trade as you were trading it, but I don't remember the specifics of what we were talking about, or at least as you entered it, we were talking about it.
I know I'm not good at using like a flatten button or I need to have something concrete that takes a decision away from me. So that's what a stop does for you. It takes the decision away from you.
Your risk manager made the decision already. The executor doesn't have to worry about it.
Right. And that's something that kind of came out of that was after talking to Rich. I've got a couple different hats sitting around here, so that way I can try to take as much of the decision-making out of Executioner Kyle's hands.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a hood, which is what the wife says I should use for the executioner side, but maybe I'll order one. but yeah, that's what you need. I think I need to be successful. I the risk manager does the analysis, then the executioner goes in and places the orders. So actually I had another Capital One trade drawn up, and I put my research hat on. I picked my levels, my points, my targets, my trigger, and my cut point. So that way, when it came time to act, there was no thinking involved. The trade never had a chance to execute because it never hit my levels, but that's the way I want to trade going forward. I want to have the research side of it done with a separate mindset, so that way the execution side comes with less thinking and more just clicking.
No, that's beautiful. That's exactly what we both need to start redoing.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to remember to take the hat off, though.
Yeah.
I just executed a trade with my hat on. I'm a research Kyle right now.
Damn it. Get out of here, research Kyle. Go back to your office.
Do you have an ugly?
I can't think of anything I did that was ugly. I spent most of the week making music.
I think you managed to take an ugly something that could have been an ugly and managed to turn it into just a bad and a learning lesson.
Well, that's why I said it's bad and good. It's because it was a bad thing.
Yeah,
exactly. I totally agree. It would have been ugly. It would have been ugly if I'd made that revenge trade and taken that loss. It would have been ugly because the loss from the first trade was the risk management parameters. It was like, I can lose $30, yep. And I lost that $30, and I was like, I can lose another $30. I'm like, no, Dana, stop. No. $30. It's not even a full tank of gas anymore.
Still a good week overall, though. It seems like, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Other than our bet picks,
I lost the most money on a bet pick, which that feels really good to say.
I know.
That's where I lost all the money this week.
Right. Are you ready to wrap things up and make another one?
I sure am. I think we got a new tune. I need it, wanna beat it, gonna win it if I take it from you. I'm filling my positions, quit your bitching, random's gonna lose. Got a chart full of levels and a stop that's not too tight. It's bet, pick a time in the shop, so pick 'em right. All right. Okay. So I'm going to stay away from oil, and I'm going to do, you know, since I'm back to start and Random's got such a huge lead, I gotta make a wild move. So when I'm looking at the list of stocks at all time highs, you know, that magical all time high.
Yep. Yes, sir.
The one that catches my eye is ZIM, Zim Integrated Shipping Services. Not just Invader Zim, the cartoon I love. There's also a stock, Zim. They are transportation, marine shipping. So they're a ship over the ocean shipping company. They just posted earnings on March 7th, a 7% surprise on earnings, a 3% surprise on revenue.
Nice.
And they've just been running like a beast all week, all-time highs. And
ZIM?
ZIM. And so what do you think I'm going to do, Kyle? I'm going to short it.
Oh, going to short a rising knife? Okay.
Yeah. Somebody's down below us throwing knives upward, and I'm going to jump on it. I'll use my body to stop the rising knife.
Pretty nice wick on today. Fucking buy volume looks really strong.
It does. So my plan is on Monday when it opens, I want the bet pick to take a beat, and if it's above, no, fuck it, I'll just short it from the bell. I don't want to do anything crazy. I think we might see it hit 81. So I guess I'll short half of the position at the bell.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it hits above 81, I'll short it again at 81. And then the stop will be at 83.
Again at 81, stop loss at 83.
Take profit's going to be at 74.
Okay. I am also going to short something. Surprise, surprise. I'm going to short BBBY.
Okay. Very solid.
I want to take advantage of what I think is going to be a gap fill next week. I will do the same. I'll short half at open. I'll short the second half at 22 with a stop loss at 25 and a take profit at 17.5.
All right. Okay. Should we fucking get this over with and pick a stupid random stock?
VST, Vistra Corp.
Vistra Corp.
It's a New York Stock Exchange public utilities.
Those are doing good right now.
I know.
So is this.
I think the fucking 12-sided dice app I got is cheating. Well, at least this one's up there, so it can at least fall.
Yeah.
That's got a nice gap all the way down at 18. How is this going up when it keeps posting some terrible earnings?
Every earnings. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5%
miss.
The last 5 earnings.
100% miss back in October.
100% miss.
Good lord.
We said we were going to make money. We didn't make any money. Oh, yeah. No, good. Let random go long and let it fill that gap below. I know it's a few months back, but yeah, let it drop to 18.
Yeah.
Random deserves it.
Wow.
I actually think there's a good chance it's going to retest 20, 25, or 20.5 area.
Look how strong it rejected off of that was on that earnings call back in February 21 when it fell from that fucking height. Damn, that thing that left a, let's see, 22 all the way down to 19. It left a $3 gap in a stock that trades at $20.
Yeah, that was dismal.
And a fucking utility company.
It's just, yeah. Well,
all
well,
right. Well, fuck you, random.
There you have it.
If this makes money, then I quit.
Just giving up. Oh, there you have it. I am short ZIM. Kyle is short BBBY. And random's got VST. And I am a betting man. And if I was a listener, I would probably be betting on random, Kyle. That's
yeah, I would too.
That's where my morale is at after WWR.
Man, oh shit.
Hey, you know the public PEG, Public Service Enterprise Group, that random had?
Oh yeah.
They hit all-time highs on the 8th, March 8th.
Oh, of course they did.
Of course they did. Anyway.
I couldn't random have it the week when it dropped all the way back down to 61.
Good question. All right, folks, thanks for sticking around to the end of the episode. We love you all so much. We got to close down the shop. Until next time, happy trades.
Goodbye. Thanks for joining us. You can find us off air at twobullsinachinashop.com. That's the number 2bullsinachinashop.com. Make sure you check us out. Download us on any streaming network. Blah, 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 blah. You know what to do. Rate, subscribe.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.